Hello, this is Leslie.
This is Shireen from the Making a Difference About Domestic Violence show. And right now I have Leslie on the line. Leslie, are you there?
I am here, Shireen.
Oh, awesome. I am so sorry. I've had so many problems with my computers. And I have several of them. So anyway, let me first share that we're going to be having Lisa Leon. She's a mental health specialist in St. George, Utah tonight. She's going to talk about a few things on how to help ourselves through trauma and healing after abuse. But first,
yes.
Because our show was ended so quickly, I want to talk to you, Leslie, and I want you to share all the things that you did not get to share last time. Can you please do that with us now?
Yes. What other questions do you have? I think when we left off, we were getting some phone calls in, and I had some questions come through.
Yes, yes. There was something about, let me see, I wrote it down.
I remember I'm talking about asking if I
had
gotten to see my.
Oh, I was about that correction, Leslie.
I'm sorry. Yes.
I wanted you to talk about the correction about what someone said about
yes.
you.
Yeah. Somebody, when I had somebody call in and asked if I was able to see my grandchildren, and back in October I had stated that someone had said I needed psychological help. And that someone was the murderer's father, and he's the one that beat his son. And I've been
right.
going through counseling, and I have actually been counseling other people, and it was almost kind of laughable.
Yeah, don't you think that healing when you're helping other people? I mean, I really think
very
that's
much
awesome.
So. I mean, what I've gone through with my daughter has helped me help other people, because I don't know what else to do but reach out and help others who've been through very similar circumstance. And 2 weeks ago, we were talking about the phrase gaslighting, and that's kind of a new phrase, and a lot of people don't understand what that is. And I wanted to kind of explain, if I can, what the term gaslighting means. And
absolutely.
When you hear somebody that says they're gaslighted, it's a form of manipulation, and they seek to sow seeds of doubt and confusion in the mind of the victim, and it makes them not trust the people that they actually do trust. And they target the people that are actually trying to help them and make them think that those people are not actually there to help them. And that's what gaslighting is about. You know, they alienate them and they isolate them and make them think the people that are actually out there to help them are the ones that are targeting them to hurt them. And
yes.
This is what victims go through so very often.
Yes. It's not
and
only
it
that.
It even makes them, it makes them question their own sanity.
Right. And that's exactly true. And there's a movie out called Gaslight, and that's actually where that name comes from. But, you know, when you think you saw something, they tell you you didn't see it. When you heard something, they tell you you're crazy, you didn't hear that. And
right.
all sorts of things. Yeah.
It actually makes somebody feel like they're going crazy, and it makes them question their own sanity.
Right. Right. And you don't trust anyone as a victim of abuse, I didn't talk to any of my best friends out of shame and fear, and I can't even describe all the adjectives. And I only reached out to one friend because I don't know why. I've just known her for most of my life, and so I didn't have anybody else.
Those are usually the ones you can trust, or the ones that have known you prior to the relationships. And a warning sign, another huge warning sign I'd like to throw out there is a lot of abusers, you know, if a victim going through domestic abuse, what they're going to want to do is they're going to want to seek marital counseling or relationship counseling. And a lot of times the abusers will go along with it. So that way they can gain power and knowledge and be able to manipulate the victim in that area. They can say, well, I went through counseling and they said that I'm okay and I can do this and I can do that. And it heightens their control over the victim. So that's another area where people really need to be careful.
Yes. And you know what? You did say that you were going to share your closing statements with us as well.
Yes, definitely. Let me get those out real quick. What happened was my victim impact statement was, I don't have it right here with me. Let me pull it out just one moment. Do you have any other questions for me?
I don't. I thought your interview last week was absolutely amazing and very insightful. I've had a lot of great reviews and people really enjoyed it, actually. Not enjoyed that what had happened, but the outcome.
Well, good. I'm glad that they did. And my victim impact statement, I was hoping to read, and it's not in the book that I keep with me normally. I really honestly don't know what happened to it. Let me see if I can pull it up on my computer very quickly because I have it here.
Okay, or if you'd like to just briefly go over it, that either way is just fine with me.
And I'm pulling it up now. Another thing I would like to add is, you know, if there's anybody out there who is going through questioning if they're going through abuse, you know, if you've been talked to and degraded or made you feel like you're less of a person, you know, if you've been told that you're nothing, if you've been told that you don't count and that people don't love you, that is a form of domestic violence. You don't have to be punched in the face. You don't have to be hit on. Emotional abuse is just as real as physical abuse, and sometimes it can be even more scarring. And I want everybody out there to know that being a victim of domestic violence, sometimes you don't have physical bruises. Sometimes you have the emotional bruises that can go much deeper, that don't heal as quickly as a physical bruise. And I'm not discounting anybody, because my daughter, above all people, my daughter had so many bruises on her petite little frame. It just kills my heart. But there are people out there that have suffered emotional abuse for many, many years, and they feel like they have nowhere to turn. But you do have somewhere to turn, because there are people that care about you, and you are worth something.
Yes.
And I want to read my victim impact statement. I do have it pulled up now.
Okay, thank you.
Alicia's murderer's name was Daniel. And I said to him, and I had a hard time with it because the court didn't make him face me. He had his back turned to me the whole time, and he was talking to his attorney probably half of the time that I was reading this to him. Anyway, it says, Daniel, I don't hate you. I can't hate you. This is not what God would want for anyone. When you murdered my Alicia, you didn't just take one life. You shattered every individual that was connected to my precious daughter. Hating you will not bring back my angel, but it will just fester like a cancer, and I refuse for you to have that kind of power over my life. I have no other choice but to forgive you and let God truly work in your heart. But you need to admit to God for all the things you did to Alicia and honestly be sorry for everything that you subjected her to. And that is the only way that God can hear your prayers and help you. As each night falls, I die a little more each day. And I can't help but wonder what my precious Lucy would have been like if she had been given the gift of a hope and a future. You were incredibly blessed with a true child of God who loved life, and you stole her from Dylan, Emily, and Alyssa, the children she had always dreamed of having. All she wanted in life was to be the amazing mother that God called her to be, but you took that from her and destroyed those precious babies' lives. I look back on the day that we were both in the delivery room watching Alyssa see the world for the first time. You, Daniel, are responsible for taking the beautiful life who gave you those precious children by committing this horrible act. You also stole the whole sense of security from those three miracles that she gave you, and now their world has shattered into a life of loss, anger, fear, and confusion. She will never experience the joy of her first dances, homecomings, graduations, weddings, and other life experiences. Even more importantly, Dylan, Emily, and Alyssa will never be able to have their mother, their sweet, loving mother, there to help pick out suits, gowns, and cheer them on in life because of your selfish, evil actions. Alicia was one of the rare people who loved unconditionally and never let anyone know the terror that she experienced in her daily life. This killed me inside, knowing that she had to cover up the abuse every time I asked her if everything was okay or if she was happy. You were supposed to be the one to protect her and keep her safe. When she met you, she had never even kissed a boy, but you were the one that took her innocence. You human trafficked her. You broke her tiny frame and made her too scared to let anyone know what she was going through because you threatened to kill her family. And that, Daniel, is something that you should think about and pay for the rest of your life. You don't have the right to steal a mother, a daughter, a sister, and a very dear friend to so many who love her from us. You deserve to have that freedom taken from you because you took those blessings from her and the ones who love her so dearly by taking my beautiful Alicia's life. In a strange way, I am relieved that she's no longer here. I constantly prayed and asked God why. Why did you take my precious Alicia? And then one day in my private time, God spoke to me and let me know, Leslie, I loved your baby too much to see her go through this terror and torture of a life that you, Daniel, put her through. So I called her home in order for me to love her, protect her, and care for her in the way she truly deserves. No, it's not what God's will was for her life to be taken in such a violent manner. But I believe in my heart and every fiber of my being that you were hurting my Heavenly Father too much to allow him to allow this terror to continue for one second. Alicia wasn't just my daughter. She was my best friend, and we were closer than anyone will ever know. Up until the night that you brutalized and murdered my precious baby for the final time, she would crawl up into my lap, put her arms around my neck, and lay her head on my shoulder as she softly told me how much she loves me and was thankful that I was her mama. She also told me how thankful she was that her bonus dad, Darren, was in her life because he brought her so much comfort, wisdom, and love. I look forward to the day that when God calls me home so that I may hold my precious angel again. And this is when I read Alicia's voice, her poem that she wrote to me, and I don't have it with me. And then I continue to say, Daniel, you don't deserve to have any kind of position in your children's lives. I would never want them to become the monster that you've been to them. I pray each and every day that you think about what you've done and that God holds you and anyone else who is allowed to be accountable for her sex trafficking completely responsible. You deserve to live the rest of your days behind bars and far away from anyone that you could ever hurt again, both physically and emotionally. I will forever be Alicia's voice. It's time that the families of these beautiful victims that have fallen prey to cowards like you will join together and break the silence against domestic violence, sex trafficking, and illegal handgun violence.
That was so beautiful. I think it shows a lot of healing. And what are your thoughts? I think it shows a lot of forgiveness and healing and honesty.
Well, it took me 6 months to write that and took a lot of prayer because, you know, your first thought is anger. But, you know, bitterness and anger doesn't do anything but fester. And if there are any mothers out there who have lost their children the same way or in any other violent crime, I'd like to encourage you to try to forgive and move on, because it's not going to do anything but destroy you. And you can't be of use to other people if you are harboring bitterness in your life. That's not what
right.
God intends us to do. And
right.
And the Alicia's Voice Foundation is out there to help other families of these fallen victims. And that's what my goal is for the rest of my life, is to reach out and be a light in the darkness of domestic violence and of sex trafficking. And I'm going to tell you, I am a firm believer of our Second Amendment, but I do not agree with some of our laws, that there are so many felons are able to get a hold of these guns illegally. And
yes.
I think that there need to be some changes in our laws as far as they're too light. I don't think anybody that lives in a home of a convicted felon should be able to own a handgun, because the gun that murdered Alicia was in her own name.
Yeah.
And she should not, as much as I love my daughter, she should not have been allowed to purchase a handgun, because by her purchasing that gun, that's how her murder was committed.
Yeah. Well, I personally think that more laws should be more strict on abusers.
I agree.
Letting them go and just slapping them on the wrist a few times. They wouldn't abuse if the penalty was strong enough.
I agree. I think there needs to be a stiffer penalty. I think that if somebody strikes a woman or a victim and it is proven to be domestic violence, I think they should receive a felony first off.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a felony for beating a dog nowadays. And the laws have been passed to where if a neighbor sees you kick a dog, you get a felony.
Yeah.
Where are the laws for the victims of domestic violence? You get a misdemeanor if you get caught kicking your spouse or your girlfriend or your boyfriend. There are stiffer laws for animals than they are humans.
I agree. I agree with that. Hey, girlfriend, I got to get to my other person that's on tonight. Lisa.
Well, thank you so much.
I'll
continue to listen to Lisa, and I look forward to hearing what she has to say.
Okay, excellent. She's amazing. She's a really good friend, and she's absolutely amazing. And so definitely continue listening in. Okay, sweetie?
Okay, and I look forward to being at your conference June 1st and 2nd.
Yes, I wanted to – thanks for bringing that up. We are having a domestic violence conference in St. Joe. Actually, it's in Ivins, Utah at TuaCon on June 1st and 2nd of 2018, so in a little more than a month. And we have several speakers, and you're one of them. So that's going to be great.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You take care, and I will continue to listen.
All right. Thank you so much, Leslie. Right. I so appreciate you coming on tonight.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, before I introduce Lisa, or I've already introduced her, I guess, I just wanted to share a few things. My show can also be heard on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play if you subscribe to those services. If you want links, you can go straight to cwrtalknetwork.com website and click on the logo for those services as well. If you want to call in tonight and speak to Lisa, the number is 917-889-8078. And let's welcome Lisa to the show. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Shireen. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for doing it for us. So you're going to talk to us tonight on what impact does domestic abuse have on individuals with mental health. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So there are four... Go ahead.
Yeah, as a mental health professional, there's definitely effects of domestic violence on your mental health, and I think it's important for people to be aware of what really, you know, the type of impact that it has on an individual and trauma involved.
Yes, and so what are the four common areas that affect mental health?
Okay, so what I see as a therapist working with individuals who suffer after the effects, PTSD is number one. So, you know, if you're unfamiliar with what that stands for, it's post-traumatic stress disorder. And this is a psychiatric disorder that can occur following experience or witnessing a life-threatening event. So I see a lot of that. Anxiety disorders, such as panic disorder, OCD, generalized anxiety disorder. That's another one that's almost always common. Depression is a third one, especially if a victim has experienced all forms of abuse, physical, sexual, emotional, and psychological, and they're more likely to have depression. And number four is... women exposed to intimate partner violence are 6 times more likely to develop substance abuse. So, you know, this is what happens when when you're exposed to domestic violence of any type. You know, and you don't have to have all four happen to you where you've got, you know, physical, sexual, emotional, and psychological to be depressed. But we're just saying, you know, statistics are that you're more likely to have more severe depression if you've experienced all of those, because you're going to have more trauma in your life that you're dealing with. So, these are typical. This is a typical outcome of what I see when I have an individual come in after being exposed or experiencing domestic violence. And so many people don't even know or recognize that they're in a relationship or have someone in their life that has abused them. So,
right.
You know, self-awareness is important. Education
right.
is important.
And I will say, you know, I'm doing research on this for my dissertation, and just alone with the psychological abuse, the research shows that PTSD, anxiety, and depression, those three will totally come to fruition just with the psychological abuse caused by an abuser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. How does someone heal from the trauma of abuse?
Well, you know, it's a process, and everybody comes in with different problems. So, like, I've specialized in addiction and working in a treatment center where you are helping people work through their addiction, other things come up. And I would say 80 to 90% of the clients that are dealing with addiction have severe trauma in their life. And that trauma, more often than not, is a result of some type of abuse. So that's a tricky one to answer because it's a process and everybody that comes in is going to have something different going on. So like I mentioned with the trauma, if that is the most prevalent thing that's going on, that's happening, like they're just not functioning because of the trauma of abuse, they really need to work with a professional who's trained in treating individuals with severe trauma, because there are different types of treatments that you can use to help people work through trauma. But you have to be specialized in these areas to be able to do that. So finding somebody who does specialize, EMDR is one that a lot of people utilize because it helps with just reprocessing memories. But there's a number of different types of treatments for trauma. So that would be number one, definitely, is to find somebody who's trained in treating severe trauma. The next one would be working on negative cognition. So what that means is, whenever you have anxiety and depression, you've got negative cognition. So your thoughts are negative. You're in a negative spiral way of thinking, and learning how to change your thoughts and your way of thinking is super important.
Yeah.
The next one is, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think we've talked about that a few times. And didn't you indicate the synapses have to be rerouted?
Yeah, you have to. I mean, your brain gets in a bad habit of thinking a certain way. And especially if you are a victim of abuse and you've got trauma, you live in so much fear all the time that your thoughts are constantly negative. And so learning how to change that way of thinking to something more positive is you're relinquishing some control there. And there's a certain amount of, it's going to sound a little different, but when you're holding on to that negative way of thinking, it feels safe in a certain way. Because if you're always looking over your shoulder and making sure that you're safe because you've got these negative thoughts constantly going on, well, that's no way to live. But it may be the only way that you know how to live, because that's what you've been doing for, X amount of time. But,
right.
Being able to relinquish some of that control so that you can start thinking more positively and actually freeing yourself of all that negativity is part of healing. Which in turn is where... Oh, go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say, and that's what I did. I used positive affirmations was one of the things I had to use to avoid the negative cognition.
Yeah, absolutely. So anything, you have to overload yourself with positive. So that would be positive people in your life,
mm-hmm.
learning who you're going to allow to be in your life and who you're no longer going to allow to be in your life.
Right.
Setting very firm boundaries, learning how to do all that is going to be very new, but important while you're working through this process. And affirmations, daily affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really difficult for individuals when they're going through this process is trying to come up with something great about them. So when I ask a client, can you tell me 5 things about you that are great? A lot of times they just can't come up with anything because they've been told for so long how awful they are. And so just coming up with a few simple things about you that's great is the start, the beginning of learning how to change your thoughts from negative to positive. And that's why I say it's a process, because healing and recovery does not happen overnight. It took years to get where you are as far as, you know, the damage that has been done, that it's going to take some time to change. And, but practice and with effort, anybody can change. I truly believe that.
I do too. As long as they recognize they need to change and desire to change, then I think anyone can change. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. They have to have a desire, number one, because with the desire comes work. You don't have a desire,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to work. And you have to be willing to put forth effort and to really want it bad enough to do whatever it's going to take to change and to have what you really want is going to take work. You know, it's like that saying, doing the wrong thing is easy, but doing the right thing isn't. But it's worthwhile and it'll change your life. So that's number one is, yeah, definitely having a desire to be able to want to change and to have something better. So, you know, having long-term and short-term goals, that's really important when you go to therapy, to talk about what you see, what you want. And then your therapist can help you devise a plan to get there. Create a plan,
yeah.
a journey, so that you can achieve what you want to achieve. And the therapist will be able to help navigate through that process. When you're the client, you don't see what needs to happen or change, but a therapist is trained and they can see. You know, take your history, go over your past, everything. I mean, this is an important time for you to be really transparent. There's nothing to be embarrassed about or shameful for or anything. This is a time when you want to disclose as much as possible if you want to get the help that you need and have the life that you deserve to have. So definitely, I mean, healing is a process and it takes time, but it's not just time, it's what you do in that space of time. And that's why, you know, I created kind of a list here of different areas that, you know, likely that your therapist will work with you on, which is, finding somebody, number one, to help you with the trauma that's trained. Number two, when you change those negative thoughts to positive thoughts. And a negative thought can be something that's as simple as, I can't do it. And as soon as you catch yourself saying, I can't do it, change that thought right away, or change that talk right away to, I can try. And it's just by those little simple things that's gonna make a world of difference in your outlook and your perception. So those are, they're simple, but they're not easy. Put it that way. Change is not easy. So, and then working on your self-esteem. I mean, obviously your self-esteem is battered, you know, when you come into treatment, a lot of times there's just nothing left.
If you have any self-esteem at all.
Yeah, if you have any self-esteem at all. Exactly.
Right. It just amazes me how quick these guys can take those completely away. It just shocked me, totally shocked me.
Right. It's almost like, okay, what do you have that I can take from you? Okay, I'm ready. You know,
yeah.
Like they rub their hands together and go, let's get started. First, I'm going to lie to you and...
I consider myself having a pretty healthy self-image and then, or self-esteem. And then, less than a year, I'd say 6 months, and it was totally gone with that. guy. I was just in shock. I'm like, what has he done to me in such a short period of time, and how is that even possible? And mm-hmm. they're well-trained, very well-trained. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've been practicing their whole life. If you think about it, I don't know how many people realize this, but by the time you're 18, your character, who you are is who you are.
Right.
And so it either gets better or gets worse from there, depending, you know, by the time you're 18 years old, are you somebody who lies all the time? Or are you someone who really and truly tries to be honest and have integrity? After that, it's, like I said, it either goes uphill or downhill from there. And that doesn't mean people can't change. I even believe
right.
abusers can change, but they have, first of all, have to recognize that they are an abuser, and second of all,
right.
have the desire to want to change. And I
right.
don't think that happens very often, to be honest.
Right. Well,
so,
and, you know, I tend to agree with you only because of the personality disorders that they have. Kind of lends itself to not recognizing that they have a problem. But one thing that you also brought up was, or we talked about before, was boundaries and the importance
mm-hmm.
of having boundaries. You want to expound on that a tad?
Yeah, absolutely. So number one is, you know, how do you create boundaries, or how do you even know how to create boundaries? Well, if you back up one step before boundaries, it starts with values. To know what your values are. And values are basically anything that you admire in yourself or in someone else. So if you feel like I don't have any values, think about some people that you really look up to and that you admire. Why is that? Why do you admire them? Because they're an honest person, because they're hardworking, because they have integrity, because they care about other people, you know, just whatever it is. You make that list of values that are important to you and that are things that you want in your own life. And maybe some of them you already have and some of them you don't. It doesn't matter. You
right.
list both. You list both of them. And once you come up with that list of values of what's important to you, then you know exactly what kind of boundaries you need to set. So, for example, if one of your values is honesty, so you value people that are honest, and it's important for you to be honest with other people. So if you have someone in your life who lies to you or has lied to you, and you don't like that and you don't want that, you can give them the option of, A, you know, if you're going to be in my life, you need to stop lying. And if you continue to lie, then you don't have the privilege of being a part of my life. And that's the way it needs to be, because I have
yeah.
values and I'm very particular about who I invite into my life. And so that's called setting a boundary, and then you have to follow through. And that sometimes is the hardest thing, because if it is somebody who doesn't normally tell the truth, and you catch them in a lie and you say, hey, you just lied to me, and I told you from the very beginning that if you lied, you weren't going to be able to be in my life. I just can't have that in my life. And now what are we going to do? Because you just lied. That means so long. You have to let that person go. And so
right.
that's an important thing to think about when you're setting boundaries with people, is to be willing to let go of some people in your life. But know that that's for your own good. You know, that's for the betterment of your future and for you to be happy and to have self-respect. And to have other people respect you, and you respect others.
Yeah, a lot of things about boundaries, though, also is, or such as the one that you described, is the reason why you can't have someone in your life that lies to you is because of, like what Leslie was talking about, gaslighting is just one lie after another. and you're just kind of done trying to figure out who's telling the truth and who's being honest with you and who's, you know, a good person. Why do we need people that lie to us? I mean, it's not even, I wouldn't want to have them.
You can't trust them. It makes you feel insecure. You know, and without trust and security in your life, what purpose? How do they add to your life? They take from your life. And our world is full of takers. We need more givers. And so that's an easy way to process of elimination. It's an easy elimination, in my opinion. Just, you know what? You're taking from my life. You're not adding to my life. And so I need to let you go. And having boundaries in your life and actually implementing them and following through with those boundaries is very empowering. And it makes you feel good. And it's not easy to do in the beginning, but once you do it, it becomes easier. In fact, you know, one thing I can tell you is that for me personally, in my own personal life, when someone crosses a boundary, and I don't like confrontation just like anybody else, but what's worse than not confronting a person to me is allowing them to get away with something and then being upset with myself because I feel like I just got walked all over or taken advantage of. And I would much rather confront somebody and call somebody out on something or lose them out of my life than to be in a position where I'm angry at myself because I just let somebody treat me in a way that I don't deserve to be treated. And that's how you teach people how to treat you. You have to have boundaries in your life because unfortunately we don't live in a perfect world where people are respectful.
Right.
And
one of the boundaries I chose, go ahead.
No, that's it. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, one of the boundaries I chose is on my Facebook, I blocked everyone that knew him or had anything to do with him because he had always stalked my Facebook. And not only does an abuser abuse you, but their friends will abuse you or they will get other people to abuse you as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, they've got, you know, birds of a feather flock together. So they've got their little band there of people that support them, you know.
Right.
Sick people. So.
Yeah. That
yeah.
Is still an illness as well, right?
Mhm. Yeah, it is. They're abusing you too, just in a different way. So,
yeah, I've heard two names for that. I've heard flying monkey for those that abuse for an abuser, and also abuse by proxy. Both I like. I have to say both names I like. But
hey, you know, if we could back up a little bit on the when I was talking about the four common areas that affect mental health, there's some other mental health issues that are also affected by trauma abuse, and. I mentioned low self-esteem, obviously, but also people can have hallucinations. They can have disassociations or detached from reality. They can have eating disorders, anorexia, bulimia, binging, purging, and suicidal behavior is in 35% to 40%, where at least out of that 35% to 40%, they'll make one suicide attempt. And so, numerous
problems.
Wouldn't
you think that almost all abuse victims have suicidal ideation, whether they make the attempt or not? What percentage would you say that was? I would say it's probably like 95. Just because we want the behavior to stop, and what else, what other way is there that it's going to stop?
Yeah, they may not actually have a plan or would ever really truly do anything, but the thought of, gosh, I think it would just be easier if I wasn't here, you know, or if I didn't have to deal with all this. So definitely,
yeah, I
would say majority.
If I took my life or he got through.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Right. Yeah. Or if I just wasn't here, and, you know, and, or even just the thought of having to go through recovery and it's going to entail, you know, I think that that can bring somebody down too, to a point where they feel like, why try? This is just, I'm so damaged at this point. How can I ever recover? You know, just that feeling of hopelessness.
Right.
So definitely, yeah, suicide ideation.
And they're adding
to
that hopelessness through every means they can.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. So, yeah, so there's some things right there. And, you know, yeah, healing, if we go back to the healing of trauma, of abuse, there's a, yeah, it's super important that people have values, define what their values are, and establish boundaries in their life and follow through with those boundaries. And what that's going to do is teach you how to be assertive. What we don't want to be is passive aggressive, and we don't want to be aggressive. We want to be assertive, and being assertive is really just saying what you want to say, but doing it in a nice way.
And it's a great quality, and, actually.
Uh-huh. Instead of feeling like I'm not worthy of requesting or asking for what I want in this life, you absolutely are. You just do it in a nice way, and not, do not worry about how somebody else responds to it. That's on them.
Right.
Client last night that is a victim of domestic violence, and very caught up in just struggling with being able to establish boundaries in her life, because every time she tries, the person she tries to establish a boundary with, you know, the way that they respond is so manipulative that it puts her right back in that guilt and shame place that she's so desperately trying to escape from. And then she's there again going, oh, no, I can't do this because it makes them feel this way, and now I feel horrible. And so we're not responsible for how other people respond to our boundaries. That's on them. You're not doing anything wrong by being nice, but saying what you need and what you want in your life. But, you know, being able to absorb that and get used to that whole idea takes time. And at first it is going to be uncomfortable, and you may feel like, oh, I just can't do this, you know, because other people don't like it. Of course they don't like it. They don't want you to change, because how you are right now works great for them, but it's not working for you. And I'm sorry, but isn't life about creating your own happiness? So this is part of the process. This is what we need to do to do that, to accomplish that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely getting rid of that garbage out of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of books do you think would be good for that?
For creating boundaries in your life? Well, I mean, definitely.
Yeah, well, I have a book called Boundaries, but any of authors that you think is really good?
There's a book out there called Where to Draw the Line that I think is excellent. You know, as far as this boundaries, you know, okay, what goes hand in hand with this is also codependency. So learning how not to be codependent, and there's Codependent No More is an excellent book, but anything along those lines is going to help you to learn to detach and learn that, how to develop boundaries. Because, you know, when you're a victim of domestic violence and abuse, you've got codependency big time. And which codependency, my basic definition of that is doing something for someone else that they can do for themselves. And that can be anything from, I don't know, getting up and getting your own drink out of the fridge to you're not responsible for somebody else's happiness. So learning how to detach yourself from other people to a certain extent, in a healthy way, is important. That doesn't mean that we don't want and we don't need attachments. That's just a human desire that we have, is to be connected to other people. But you want to be in a healthy way. So having healthy boundaries and learning how to break the cycle of codependency is super important, so that you can do that and not feel guilty about it.
Right.
So,
right.
Let's see. There's some.
What
other...
are some other resources?
Finding support groups is really important. So, Google. Gosh, that's a great resource. We can Google support groups. I've done it that way, but also contacting your therapist or treatment centers or clergy, anybody really, just ask around as far as finding support groups. Seminars to empower and educate you, just like the seminar that SAVE is having on June 1st and 2nd, anything like that. Going to therapy, finding a good therapist that you feel comfortable with, that specializes in domestic violence and abuse. So all these things are great resources and helpful. And I know when I do therapy, I give my clients assignments, and I always refer books to them and have them read, because it's a great way for information to really sink into your brain. You see it, you read it, you absorb it, and you can go back to it. You can highlight it. You can read it and write it, and that really sinks in. But or you can highlight it and then bring it into therapy and talk about it and process it. And so,
yeah, you know what I liked about support groups was the one I used was called Abuse Recovery Ministry Services. It's more of a religious type one, but what I felt was companionship. They felt the same things I felt. I thought I was alone in feeling what I thought. Oh, I am crazy, and I'm alone in this. I'm the only one who feels like this, and so forth. And you're not. You're not. Everybody feels the same, and it was great. I'm like, yay! Everybody feels the same way I do.
Yeah, exactly. Right, and that's what's great about support groups, is that you have other people there that have been where you've been and have had similar experiences, and so you have that, you feel supported and you feel validated, and it's mm-hmm. awesome, and it also helps you just to open up and talk about what's happened and feel like you're in a safe place to do that. Because you're not alone, and other people are sharing their experiences as well, and then you can talk about and support one another and encourage one another, and offer, advice or wisdom or, other things that you've gained through your own personal resources, and share that with other people and vice versa. So support groups are awesome. I'm all for
right.
them.
And you brought up the conference in June, and let me give the listeners an address for that. DVAconference.com is where you can register for that if you want to. And I know that it's free to everyone who wants to attend, so go there and try it out. It's going to be for victims as well as those who work with victims, as well as those who are just interested in learning more about domestic violence.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I'm excited.
Yeah.
So, my next question.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, one other thing when you're healing from trauma that I didn't want to miss is that one of the worst things you can do is to get into another relationship. And that's probably what you want to do. Because you're feeling alone, and we tend to do what feels comfortable for us, even if it's dysfunctional, even if it's harmful, we just can get into a cycle of bad habits and not even know that it's a bad habit, but going, okay, well, this guy didn't treat me well, so I just need to find someone else who will. And not a good idea for two reasons. First of all, we tend to be attracted to the same type of people without recognizing it. And so your likelihood of getting into yet another abusive relationship is extremely high. Number two, if you happen to be lucky, get lucky, and meet somebody who isn't abusive, which would be amazing, you're still pretty messed up. And you're not in a place where you're really available. And in a healthy relationship, we need to be healthy so that we can give. We have something to give. And you don't have anything to give at this point. I mean, you've had so much taken from you that there's nothing left. And you really need this time to yourself to take care of you and to get yourself in a healthy place so you're available for somebody who's healthy.
Right.
So that's one thing I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss during the healing process.
And I appreciate that. I think that's perfect because I actually did that. And now I'm sitting back and I'm saying, no, I'm working on my healing. I'm not sure when that will be over or what, but I am looking more into not dating narcissists and sociopaths.
Yes. So we know what not to do, but sometimes we don't know how not to do it, you know. Right?
True.
You don't know what you don't know. Yeah. So it's and you know, I can tell you one thing about falling into patterns of being attracted to the same type of people. And you think, okay, this next person is so different than the other one. They can't possibly be anything alike. Is that you really have to, first of all, know what's wrong with the people that you're attracted to. And also, why is it that you're attracted to them? What is it about you that makes you attracted to these people? And so once you figure that out, you can learn how not to be attracted to them. So, for example, like, let's say you're attracted to a guy because he seems really mysterious, you know, and you find that really intriguing, and it's kind of exciting because he doesn't really expose himself, but yet he wants to know a lot about you, but you don't really know that much about him because he's such a mystery. And ooh, that's so exciting and something that just really grabs you. Well, when you do some digging into that, you learn that, okay, you know what? There's reasons why he is so mysterious. It's because he has something to hide, his abusive behavior, right? Some things about him that aren't so attractive, like, wow, maybe he has a bad temper. Maybe he doesn't talk about himself because he's got some demons in his closet, or maybe he doesn't have really good long-term history of relationships, or maybe his family relationships aren't good. I mean, there could be a whole host of reasons why you don't know much about him. And so hopefully going forward, when you know that, you can go, ooh, red flag. You know, this guy seems really mysterious, and to me, that means run, because he's got something to hide, and I don't know what it is, and I don't care. I just know I need to get away from him.
Let me share one thing that I found in my last relationship was he had all the right answers. He had a lot in common with me, and every time I had a question, he wasn't mysterious at all, very self-assured and everything. But there was something that was not right, that in my head felt just not right, or in my gut, I guess I should say. It was in my gut. Something just didn't seem right. So I'd ask all these questions. He had always had the right answer. But yet the truth was, none of it was the truth. It was all a lie. Everything he would say was a lie. He just knew what to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I should have went with my gut is what I should have done. And if something doesn't seem right, there's something wrong.
Exactly. And women's instincts are 99% right on. I believe that that's the God-given gift, that God felt like, you know, we need some protection because we're just innately nurturing and loving
mm-hmm.
and caring, and we're easily deceived. And so I believe that he gave us those instincts to help protect us. But it is up to us to pay attention to those instincts, and not just pay attention to them, but take them to heart and really don't, you know, whatever you feel, go with it. If you have a bad
right.
feeling, that means something. There's something off
right.
and there's something not right. If you want to see what that's about, okay, but be very reserved and don't jump in with 2 feet, but kind of be a little standoffish and investigate, see what that means. And if you approach a relationship or a person with that in mind, you're going to be a little bit more on your guard. It doesn't mean that everyone you meet you can't trust or whatever. What it means is that you're learning to trust yourself and to trust your instincts. And your instincts
yeah.
have already told you, it's already told you something. And now,
yeah.
you know, if you feel like you need to investigate more, fine. But if that's enough for you, great. Walk away.
So,
but, yeah.
My recommendation is exactly what you said. Go with your instincts, not with, oh, they have all the right answers. And, oh, it's just in my head. I'm just feeling anxiety because of this great relationship or whatever. You want to
mm-hmm.
make up an excuse. It's there for a reason.
Yeah, and women are notorious for giving second chances, giving people
yeah.
the benefit of the doubt, making excuses for others.
Yeah.
Oh, he didn't mean it like that, or he meant well, or his heart's in the right place, or he's a good person, he just struggles with this, or... You know, it's just, no, don't do that. Don't do it.
Right.
You don't need to make excuses for someone else, all right? It is what it is.
Right.
If you meet somebody
right.
and they have a temper, whoa, this guy's got a temper, and that scares me, period.
Right.
I don't care why he has a temper. I don't care if he had a bad day, he's tired, he grew up with a parent who was impatient. There's no excuse.
Right.
So... You just, it is what it is. You have the information. It's right there. Now it's up to you to either continue to be with this person or walk away.
Right.
I would encourage anyone to walk away from that situation. Maybe let the person know that hey, you know, if you decide to work on this issue that you have and get some help and you're really trying to change and all that, great. You know, maybe reach out to me in 6 months. But until then, I would immediately walk away.
Yeah, I'm learning that. Like you said, you have to learn, you know, all sorts of things about your healing and about what to look for and why not to get into a relationship right away and what to look for in a new relationship because you're used to that type of it in the old relationships and you'll just get back into an abusive relationship. So, yes, that is one thing I'm
mm-hmm.
working on right there is listening to my gut.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's, you know,
okay.
I think it's a, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just think it's a, you know, it's a process. It's not something that you master right away. And sometimes it's, you know, 2 steps forward, 1 step back. And you go, oh, gosh, you know, I fell into it again. And
yeah.
then you just pick up the pieces and you go, okay, my bad. Now I'm going to I'm just going to walk away now. I already time on this, and I wish I hadn't, but I'm learning. I'm learning. I'm going to get there eventually. So
let me ask you this. When you're counseling an individual who has been a victim of domestic abuse, where do you usually start in the healing process?
Yeah, knowing where to start is really individual. Depends on the apparent priority. So somebody comes in and they have an eating disorder and they are skin and bones and this is, you know, life-threatening. We're going to start with that. If they come in and they've got phobias, let's say they're not even functioning. They're not barely leaving the house. It took them 2 hours just to get to your office for their appointment because they can't walk to their car, they can't get an elevator, all those. We're going to start with the phobias. So it's wherever you are is where we're going to start, whatever the priority is. So that's just, just depends
what's
on.
What's most detrimental to their health at the time?
Yeah, whatever is most detrimental. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, my next question is, how do you know when you're stuck in the cycle of shame?
Oh, shame is a huge one. We all suffer from shame, you know, but especially when you've been a victim of domestic violence. So first of all, let's define what shame is. Shame is a painful feeling that we are unworthy of love and belonging. You know, I am a bad person because, okay, nobody's really a bad person because we make bad choices, but that doesn't make us a bad person. And it's okay to have some guilt in your life. You don't want to be ridden with guilt, but when we do something that we know is not the best decision, it's good to feel a little guilt. That's what keeps us from repeating that decision. So that's okay. But shame, when you're stuck in that. So that's my definition of shame. The secrets that create shame damage your life, okay? So there's three things that feed shame, and that's secrecy, silence, and judgment. And those things shape the way that you think. So when you are stuck in secrecy, obviously you're not sharing, you're not talking to anybody about what's going on in your life. Domestic violence in particular, since that's what we're talking about. So who wants to tell anyone, the person that they love more than anything else is hurting them? There's a lot of shame that comes with that secret, isn't there?
Well, and it might not be physical pain. I didn't share any of the psychological abuse that I was enduring. And the reason why is because I did not want anyone to feel bad about my husband. I loved him, and I wanted everyone to think, hey, he's a great guy, not the person he truly was, but I wanted to create an image for him. And he created an image for me to his friends. And my image that I created for my spouse was that he was awesome, he was great, he was magnificent. And the image he created for me to his friends is she's a crazy witch, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And who's going to believe you? Because what they see is something completely different. So, keeping that secret and silence go hand in hand, but just not talking about it. Who do I talk to? Who can I tell about this secret that I have? It's so shaming. And I don't want people to think less of this person that I love so much. And what will they think of me if I'm saying this? Because they're probably not going to believe it, you know? And so it's just like this that you get stuck in. And then the judgment that comes from that too is, you know, are people going to judge me? What are they going to think of me for being with him when he's treating me this way? Or are they going to think he's wonderful and I'm the problem, you know? So where's that judgment going to be coming from? So all of that can really take over and change the way that you think. one thing that comes too from shame is perfectionism. So,
yes,
you know, the common thought is I have to look perfect, work perfect, be perfect, live perfect, and that's just not possible. It's not possible to be perfect at all times. That perfectionism protects us from being seen by others as our authentic selves. So being able to just be genuine and be yourself. But, you know, when you're in an abusive relationship and you're told that you're no good and that you're not perfect enough and that you're not good enough, and that's been pounded into your head over and over and over again, and you're trying so hard to do everything better and to be better and to look better and to make everything just so that this person that you love so much will accept you and love you, you develop this unrealistic idea of how you're supposed to be,
right,
instead of being the beautiful, imperfect person that we all are.
Right.
And learning to embrace
right.
that, you know.
Don't you think a lot of that comes from them constantly ridiculing us is why we feel that we need to be perfect at everything? Because, you know, your clothes aren't good enough, your hair's not good enough, your weight's not good enough, your makeup's not good enough. You know,
mm-hmm.
nothing you do
yeah,
is
absolutely.
Good enough.
Yeah, constant criticism and put downs. And no matter how hard you try, it's never good enough. And just feeling like you constantly have to try harder and harder and harder. To please this person that you're never going to please.
Right, never.
But you think, yeah, but you don't know that. You keep thinking,
right.
oh, I just need to try harder because that's what
yeah.
he's telling you. You've been brainwashed
right.
to think something different, that it's you.
Right.
It's not him, it's you. And if you could just look better and be more perfect, then he'll be happy and you'll be happy. But it doesn't work. So, of course, with that shame comes, again, low self-worth. I'm not good enough. And followed by that is the fear and vulnerability. There's fear in being vulnerable. Fear, you know, vulnerable is not just about fear, grief, and disappointment. It's also about joy, creativity, love, and safety. But you can't have creativity without failure. You have to be open enough to take a risk and fail. So being able to learn how to overcome your shame, like I said, is a process. This is all a process, but it's very important to be vulnerable. But the last thing that you want to be coming out of a domestic violent relationship is vulnerable. You've been vulnerable. And look where it got you, right? So
right.
being vulnerable also means learning how to trust again. And it's not going to happen overnight.
Right.
It's going to take a lot of time. But like I said, you know, that trust comes back to not, well, I don't know who to trust, if I can trust this person or that person, or you know, they feel so lost. But the person that you need to learn to trust first and foremost is yourself. So if you learn to trust yourself, there will be no question about who you can and cannot trust in your life.
Right.
And so that's the important thing to understand.
Right. You know what, Lisa, our time is waning here, so I want to thank you for your time tonight. And I had a few more questions for you, but maybe I can have you on another time and we can finish that up.
Sounds good. Thank you, Shireen.
Okay, thank
Appreciate
you, sweetie.
The time. You bet.
Yes.
Take care.
I have a good night.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. Just a reminder, there is a 2-day domestic violence conference in Southern Utah, which will be at no cost for those who would like to attend on June 1st and 2nd. To register, just check out the website at dvaconference.com. I want to tell you about our next guest. Our next guest in 2 weeks will be Lupi Moreno, and she's going to be talking about her new book, Unmasking the Silent Killer, The Many Faces of a Beast. I bet you think she's not been doing a whole lot, but she's been writing. She's a strong writer, and she's very good. So I want to thank you for joining us tonight, and have a great night.
You're listening to the CWR Talk Network, America's voice for causes, issues, and life empowerment. This is the CWR Talk Network, hashtag 1 million strong.
Hi, Mom. Is Claire's birthday party today? Me again, Mom. Where did I put my history book? Hi. Sorry, forgot one last thing. Sometimes it's hard to concentrate. At school, I start looking out the window, and then I forget what I was supposed to be thinking about. I know it seems like I don't care, but I do. It's just difficult for me. Love you, Mom. Bye.
Join parents and experts at Understood.org, a free online resource about learning and attention issues to help your child thrive. Brought to you by Understood.org and the Ad Council.
Someone being bullied online, you can be a witness and make a difference by letting the world know it isn't cool and by letting your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.